When clients are stuck in the past, it can be difficult to help them see how their future could be anything different. This is why Dr. Michael Yapko sees the therapist's perspective as critical in reframing the client's perspective. Here, Michael shares the one shift in focus that can open the door to post-traumatic growth.
Post-traumatic growth is a great question. It's a great topic because it's really what we're striving for. You know, trauma is ubiquitous. We all encounter it to one degree or another. And therapist perspective is everything about how you come to terms with these things. You know, trauma is a past-oriented phenomenon, and post-traumatic growth is a future-oriented phenomenon. And there are some therapists who are much more invested in the past. That's their philosophical and practical orientation. There are other therapists who are much more future-oriented in the way that they do the work that they do. But you know, I'm a firm believer in that old saying that the best way to come to terms with a really crummy past is to get a great future out of it. So to start to orient people to the future and future possibilities and the things that they can learn from their experience that they can use as resources, as strengths, and the basis for insights to start to make better decisions in their own behalf is a really critically important thing. That requires a very specific skill set. And that skill set is called compartmentalization. And whether someone does it through cognitive restructuring, or they do it through EMDR, or they do it through reactive approaches, it doesn't really much matter to me. But somehow the person's going to have to stop that process that perpetuates trauma of using the past as the reference point for making decisions about the present and the future. So that when people say things like, I'll never have a normal sexual relationship because this happened to me when I was 12. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where the past continues to infect the present. And for as long as that goes on, trauma gets perpetuated. So in part, my way of thinking about things is structurally. How does someone keep the trauma going? How does someone continue to have the past as the reference point? And how can I create counter experiences that make it abundantly clear experientially that the present and the future aren't just going to be more of the same? I think that's a really important point to get across to people. And so that kind of future orientation to me is the foundation of post-traumatic growth, starting to build a future that is compelling, that pulls people forward, that makes them look forward to tomorrow, what's going to happen next, instead of hashing and rehashing and adding more detail to and more emotion to things that have already happened that are unchangeable. And it's not ignoring the past by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, when people walk in and sit down and say, here's what happened to me, we have to be sympathetic, empathetic, and supportive and all those good things. But what's different from practitioner to practitioner is how much time they spend back there and how they use the past, whether it's to try and spend more time sorting through the emotions and emoting about it, or whether it's identifying resources and moving forward with it into the future, using those resources in empowering ways. So that's really how I think about post-traumatic growth. And if and when people watch sessions of mine that are out there by the score on video, they'll see that transition that takes place in every session from talking about then to talking about now to talking about tomorrow. And that phrase, getting a really good future out of a crummy past, is really the guideline I use.
To help clients see a better future, we have to help them change the way that they orient toward negativity. So just to review Michael's strategy, we have to look at the ways that the client might be perpetuating the trauma, and that's often because They're keeping the past as a reference point. Then we have to look at ways to help people create new experiences, experiences that will show our clients that the future will be much different from the past. To help illustrate this, Michael shares a story about a client of his who was anchored to the past.
It's working with a 34-year-old man named Mike. One-time meeting was established for the Brief Therapy Inside Out video series that was published by Zog Tucker Publishers. And so it was intentionally a one-time meeting, and to see how much can be done in a single session. This is a 34-year-old man with a terrible history of abuse, a lot of violence at the hands of his father. He ran away from home many times, was in and out of multiple foster care homes. His personal history is just terrible. And as he reports his history to me, it's abundantly clear how many PTSD symptoms he's experiencing from flashbacks on. And the interesting thing is, when I'm interviewing people, I'm not really interested so much in why they're experiencing what they're experiencing. That is usually pretty self-evident. So in interviewing him, I was interested in how the symptoms persist. And he shows some of the patterns, and I really am interested in patterns of people who are prone to, vulnerable to PTSD. One of those patterns is called global cognitive style. So when I ask him what he thinks his problems are about, he literally says, you know, the whole 34 years of my life. Well, if you think of your entire life as the problem, then how do you solve that? And so it becomes an important thing to remind any person with a history of trauma that, yeah, you've suffered some traumatic things, but there have also been some good people in your life. There have been some good events in your life. It isn't all one-dimensionally a bad thing. So to start to help him change the narrative about his own life and how he thinks about himself. But another pattern he had was rumination. He literally said, I'm always second-guessing myself about the things that I say and do. And then he literally says, I don't know how to move forward without replaying the past. There it is, using the past as the reference point. And so when I ask him a question about his the flashbacks that he reports and what happens, and he experiences these spontaneous dissociations where he totally disconnects from his wife, from his family, and his words goes off into his own little world, he's now telling me that he's quite capable of dissociative experiences, and here's the value of hypnosis as a technique, to be able to join what the person's doing in order to redirect it. That was the moment when I decided to use hypnosis with him to start to introduce new ideas.
So we can see here that Michael was dealing with two issues. Number one, his client was perpetuating a one-dimensional negative self-narrative. And number two, he was still using the past as a reference point. Once Michael began the hypnotherapy session, he could use this information to help bring about change.
And one of the ideas I introduced was through metaphor, the use of the image of a wall that is really the most concrete representation imaginable of a compartmentalization skill, a wall that separates past from present, a wall that separates past from future. And so all through the hypnosis session, which is quite a short session, I'm introducing these ideas. You're more than your history. You don't need to use the past as the reference point. You can functionally separate past experiences from how you gather and weigh information about current decisions you need to make, and a future orientation to remind him that his life isn't over, that some of the best things in his life haven't happened yet, and that he has the ability to choose what happens next. And so all of these ideas in a concentrated form, it's one of the reasons why I love experiential processes like hypnosis and guided meditations, anything that invites the person to focus and get absorbed experientially so that it's not just a cognitive or a rational kind of an intervention. It's something more multidimensional, multi-layered. And he responded beautifully, as I predicted he would, because of his history with dissociative experiences. He was capable of getting absorbed, wrapped up in his own little internal world, and using the ideas that I gave him. And so I actually have 10 years of follow-up information on this guy, and really remarkable, the reports that he gave me over the years about how much it improved his sleep, which I never even asked him about. I should have, but I didn't. But he was able to self-apply these compartmentalization skills to sleep and overcome all the insomnia that he'd been suffering. His relationship with his wife improved as he was able to become more oriented towards her and less self-absorbed. His relationship with his kids improved. And he made an entirely new career decision when he decided to move and attend aviation school and start a new career. So this was just one session intervention, but it spoke to the fact that people who are stuck in the past don't want to be. They just don't know how to move forward. And it's easy enough to verify that when you ask someone, what would the next step be? What would a progressive step be for you? And they look at you blankly and they say, I'm not sure. I'm just too stuck in all the crummy things that have happened. So being able to help people define the next step and the next step and provide the support, the encouragement, and the methods for getting where they want to go. You know, whoever it was that said that a goal without steps is merely a wish had the right idea.
As we've often seen, clients will want to move forward, but sometimes they just lack the skills to get there. And sometimes a change in our own focus can make the difference. When we as practitioners keep our focus toward the future, it can help our clients move on from the past. Dr. Ron Siegel has another take on practitioners and the competing areas of focus that often come up in our work.
I thought this was a very interesting way of framing a dynamic tension that's often present in psychotherapy. You know, at other points in the series, we've examined the tension between focusing on resource development versus focusing on whatever experience is painful or difficult. And it's interesting that Michael's framing this in terms of the past and the future, because the past, in a sense, is staying with that painful experience, because ostensibly it happened already. And the future is this possibility for things being different, this possibility for renewal or for post-traumatic growth out of it. And, you know, Michael was pointing out that a lot of clinicians, and I think it's knowing Michael, I think he's thinking of psychodynamic clinicians, spend too much time in the past, that there's too much worrying about analyzing and staying with experience from the past, and that we would do better to have more of a shift, and I think this is Michael's bias, more of a shift toward the future, toward fixing what can be fixed. So I had the question, well, is there any kind of objective or balanced stance here? And, you know, we often see that when somebody really does connect with the past and is really able to feel the past hurts in the new context, perhaps of the therapeutic relationship or the new context of having a different narrative for what's happening, once they connect with that thing that was really so painful, suddenly the present and the future changes. You know, they suddenly have resources. The thought that this will never work out shifts, and they find a way to work it out. And that's in part because when we're shutting down on an experience from the past, blocking it in some way, we tend to be shutting down the system, and we're robbed of resources, including our imagination for how to solve current problems. But by the same token, there are people who have had, I think, sufficiently few positive experiences in their lives so that even if you go back and you revisit something that's painful and you stay with it, they're still left with a kind of sense of thud, you know, like, okay, I feel that, but they don't, there isn't a kind of natural blossoming of a sense of future direction. But I think the first thing for us as clinicians is to just, this is a theme we've, I guess, been playing with, recognize our own bias, you know, as to whether we're drawn toward working with and staying with the pain of the past, or we're drawn toward coming up with new solutions and identifying the good, and then experiment from that so that we don't just stay stuck in our bias, but experiment with the other side and try to get a sense of, from our clients or our patients, if we're doing this in clinical work, of what they feel like they need to do. I think, you know, one possibility here is to point to the two directions. Well, we could spend more time exploring the past, or we could look a little bit more to the future. Which to you feels like it would be more fruitful right now?
By offering clients these kinds of options to consider, we're also helping to them establish a sense of choice. And as we heard earlier in the program, that can be vital for fostering growth. In the next module, we'll look at how one practitioner completely altered the course of treatment just by his one reaction to his client's story. I'll see you there.